This is the Dark History Project. Please like and subscribe to know when new episodes are available. Now, let's get started. The Domino of World War I, the bullet that launched the Great War. Today's episode will be a bit different. There are tons of books, movies, and documentaries about World War I and World War II, but many don't elaborate on the implications that World War I, also known as the Great War, had on the future of humanity. Even today, we can see the impact that this war had on current conflicts. Of course, we'll cover the set of events that launched World War I, but we'll also look at what was taking place around the world before the war officially started. We'll take a look at how these same tactics to deceive the public and convince them a war was justified have been used over and over again for other conflicts up to this day. From World War II to Vietnam, the Iraq-Afghanistan War, and even the most recent events between Russia and Ukraine and Israel and Palestine. What's important to understand is that the peace treaty known as the Treaty of Versailles, which was signed and officially ended the war in June 1919, was not a peace treaty, but a contract to wage a Second World War at a later date. You see, the Allies, led by the UK, the United States, France, and Russia, said that if Germany didn't sign the treaty, they would continue to wage war on them. This left them no option. Philipp Scheidemann, the head of the German government, actually resigned his position rather than sign the treaty since it did not meet any of their demands, not a single one. The new head of the German government after Scheidemann's resignation, Gustav Bauer, stated that he would sign the treaty if a couple of articles were withdrawn. The Allies refused. They told him that if he didn't sign within 24 hours, their armies would invade further territory. The Germans signed the treaty, and that was that. This war was unlike any other. It was the first time planes and machine guns were used for war at such a large scale. While you had some armies using horses and transportation, others started using vehicles and tanks. Just imagine you and your soldiers on horseback as you see this monstrous vehicle with guns on it coming straight toward you. This episode may upset many of you, but we have to understand there are different versions of what happened depending on who you ask or what country's books you are reading. Remember, everyone has their own version of events based on their own perspectives. Stay until the end so you can understand the real reasons of what events led to this war and how the actions that took place during this war built an unimaginable war machine that reshaped the world map and keeps the war machine running even today. If you have read a little about World War I, you've probably heard about what caused this war: the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand on June 28, 1914, by Bosnian Serb student Gavrilo Princip. This Bosnian was part of a student-led revolutionary group that later became known as the Young Bosnia. The assassination team was assisted by the Black Hand, a Serbian nationalist group. This help also came from several Serbian intelligence officers and included training, weapons, and access to safe houses. This is usually the story we hear about why World War I started, but this was not the reason. This was more like the first domino, or the breaking point, for Europe to go to war. It's difficult to know who was really behind World War I, as this was a strange event. The Austria-Hungary Empire blamed Serbia for the assassination of the Archduke, but there are many players involved in what launched World War I. To me, it was a conflict about power and control of economies. Vladimir Lenin said, "All the great powers are waging an imperialist, capitalist war, a predatory war, a war for the oppression of small and foreign nations, a war for the sake of the profits of the capitalists." And this may be true, but remember, even today, as much as we argue and fight over ethical practices, everyone has a phone, tablets, TVs, laptops, and other devices that came from slave labor. And we use those same devices to complain about it. It's always about the same thing, no matter if you're on the left or right of the political spectrum, both equally contributing to the problem. So as much as you want to blame one side, it doesn't matter. We're all playing the same game. Now, most wars in the last 100 years have always been about economies and power. No matter how much governments from all sides say this is for the country's freedom, pride, or to protect the homeland, it is always about money and power and ensuring that they stay ahead of others. Let's go into who was on what side during the Great War before we talk about what caused the conflict. On one side, you have the Central Powers, or the bad guys, depending on where you live. The Central Powers were made up of Germany, the Ottoman Empire, or the Turkish Empire, Austria-Hungary, and Bulgaria. On the other side, you have the Allies, led by France, the UK, Russia, the United States, Italy, and Japan. Now, with that being said, there were multiple fronts in which a new war was brewing. Let's look at England and Germany. These two countries are very important to understand because these two pretty much signed a peace treaty at the end of this war to go into a war again at a later date. Let's remember that Germany was a new country at the time the war was brewing in Europe. Just on January 18, 1871, Germany became a unified state. England's view of Germany was complex, marked by a mix of rivalry, apprehension, and respect. The relationship between the two nations evolved significantly in the years leading up to the war. In just a short amount of time, Germany rose to be an industrial and economic powerhouse. On top of that rivalry, the British Royal Navy had traditionally been the world's strongest maritime force, a crucial element of Britain's status as a global empire. Germany's decision to massively expand its navy under Kaiser Wilhelm II was seen as a direct challenge to British naval supremacy. This led to an arms race on the seas and heightened tensions. Then you had colonial rivalry in Africa between the two countries. The point is, the British viewed Germany as a problem due to its ambitions and military capabilities, threatening Britain's position as a global power. Now that we understand the position of Germany and the UK before the war, let's look at how the other countries became involved. When the conflict officially started, Austria-Hungary declared war on Serbia. Then Russia declared war on Austria-Hungary due to their alliance, or at least that's how they put it. Later on, Germany jumps in declaring war on Russia, which brings France into the mix declaring war on Germany, and all of a sudden everyone's feelings are out and everybody declares war on everybody. Now, here's a character that many of you may know, and his background is helpful to understand the Great War. Winston Churchill. We need to do an episode on him in the future, but in 1912, he was serving as the First Lord of the Admiralty in the United Kingdom, pretty much in charge of the British Navy. In July 1912, Winston Churchill's request for increased funding for the British Navy was part of a broader context of military and naval expansion and strategic adjustments. Obviously, these events were marked by rising international tensions, particularly with the growing naval power of Germany, which influenced British defense policy and strategy. So he knew. He knew something was about to happen in Europe, a chance for a realignment of power, and the British didn't want to be caught off guard by the new power Germany was building. Winston Churchill, during his tenure as the First Lord of Admiralty before the First World War started, was instrumental in transitioning the Royal Navy from coal to oil-powered ships. He recognized the strategic advantages of oil over coal, including greater efficiency, speed, and operational range. This brings a whole new set of issues and strategies used by many countries today, which is the war for resources, especially oil. During this time, the British had oil, but few oil ships. Then Germany had oil ships, but not a lot of access to oil. As a side note, Germany had the same issue during World War II. We think that the United States is always fighting for oil, but so is everyone else. As the Great War was about to start, Germany was trying to get oil concession rights from Mexico. But luckily for the UK, the United States intervened multiple times. And that has been the same thing everyone has been fighting for the last 120 years. Natural resources. Like I said, it's an economic war, just like always. Governments try to sell their people that we're fighting over ideals, freedom, democracy, for the people, etc. But it's always some other agenda. Think about it. At school, and what we're always taught is that the Great War or World War I was because of the assassination of the Archduke of the Austro-Hungarian throne. If that was the case, why was Winston Churchill and the British preparing for war years before? And so was Germany. Now, let's understand why everyone was ready to jump in on this war. And it wasn't because of the Austrian Archduke. It was because of the same thing we see right now around the world. It was a chance to change the map. How could some countries take over others during this process and redraw the map of Europe? Let's dive in and understand the whys. Why did each country want to join the conflict? I really don't think anyone knew what the Great War was going to be like. I don't think anyone anticipated the scale and the duration of the war. Let's start with Austria, besides the killing of the Archduke, which was not the reason. It was merely the excuse to push for war. For sure, they wanted to curtail Serbian nationalism and influence, but in reality, when you look at why the other countries joined, it is all around the same issue: strategic interest in the Balkans. Then we had Russia declare war on Austria. But why? Russia had a long-standing interest in the Balkans and the Ottoman Empire, including access to the Mediterranean. Germany also had a strategic interest, but once Russia jumped in, Germany was obligated to declare war on them due to the Austria-Germany alliance. And the same is true for France, who due to this declared war on Germany. And due to this system of alliances, everyone declares war on everyone. And now we have the Great War. It's important to understand that none of the countries who joined thought the conflict was going to be this long and this complicated. Let's take a look at why the Balkans are so important to everyone. And even today, much of the modern conflict is due to access to these regions. The Balkans were considered Albania, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Bulgaria, Croatia, Kosovo, Montenegro, North Macedonia, Romania, Serbia, and Slovenia. The Balkans are located at the crossroads of Europe, Asia, and the Middle East. This strategic position has made the region a crucial gateway for land and sea routes, including access to the Mediterranean Sea through the Dardanelles and the Bosphorus. Control over these routes has been vital for trade, military movements, and influence over the surrounding regions. To me, this is the main reason why. I know leaders have said over the years it is because of pride, or I'm defending my ally, or because I'm defending another country's democracy or its people, but let's be honest. Politicians always have an ulterior motive for why they do things. It's always part of a bigger plan. In this case, it is all part of an opportunity to take control of the Balkans. And if we can summarize the whole list of reasons you might find, in reality, it is because of geographic location and influence on the area. Think even up to now. Look at Russia. They have taken over countries in the last 30 years, and to this day, they are fighting to take on more. By the end of the war, Eastern Europe was reshaped. To start, you have the fragmentation of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Then, the Russian Empire was weakened by the war and the Bolshevik Revolution of 1917, leading to the creation of the Soviet Union in 1922 and the independence of countries like Finland, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. Other new states emerged from some of the territories of the collapsed empires, including Poland, Czechoslovakia, Yugoslavia, and Hungary. This war, which lasted from July 1914 to the 11th of November 1918, ended with a to-be-continued screen at the end. You see, the Treaty of Versailles, signed on the 28th of June in 1919, was forced upon the Germans. They had demands as well, but the Allied powers didn't allow for any of their requirements on the treaty. The head of the German government resigned his position rather than sign the treaty since it did not meet any of their demands. The new head of the German government, Gustav Bauer, stated that he would sign the treaty if a couple of articles were withdrawn, which the Allies refused. They told him, if he didn't sign within 24 hours, their armies would invade more German territory. The treaty imposed heavy reparations on Germany, as well as military restrictions and territory losses. This treaty was so bad for Germany that years later, a man with a funny mustache used it as the cornerstone of his political platform in the soon-to-be-formed National Socialist German Workers' Party. He used the widespread resentment towards the Treaty of Versailles as a tool to fuel nationalist and militarist sentiments in Germany. He promised to overturn the treaty, restore Germany's lost territories, and rebuild its military strength. That's why, early on this episode, I said that to me, the Versailles Treaty was just a document of everyone agreeing to continue the war at a later date. Between the end of World War I and World War II, we saw new movements being born in Europe, communism and fascism. Today, these terms are used very differently from how they were used back then. Communism is an ideology where you eliminate private ownership, everything goes to the state, and the state distributes wealth and power equally among the population. Sounds great, but when has this ever worked? You always have a few people at the top controlling everything, living like kings with billions in foreign banks. And when they get blamed or accused of doing this, they point the finger at another nation and accuse them of propaganda. Then you have fascism, where at the top you have one leader that dictates it all. And this was what Germany had with the National Socialists. One movement is supposed to be far left and the other far right. But let's keep in mind that the fascists in Europe were from socialist movements. To me, this was just two different ways of combating democracy. I hope all of this makes sense. This is all about influence and access to markets. Even today, we have the same countries fighting over other territories, some arguing that they want their old land back, and others that they are protecting the innocent. I hope this helps you to better understand these large-scale conflicts and the fact that we always have to question again and again why these conflicts happen in the first place. When someone is trying to convince you to join one movement or the other, take a step back and think about who's benefiting and why. Thank you for being with us for this episode of The Dark History Project. Please help us out by liking and remember to hit the subscribe button below. Please let us know what you think in the comments and let us know what topics you would like for us to cover in the future. We're available on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else you can listen to podcasts. We hope you enjoyed it, and our next episode will come out soon. See you then.